A reading from St. Paul's first letter to the Corinthians. Paul writes, "Now concerning spiritual gifts, brothers and sisters, I do not want you to be uninformed. You know that when you were pagans, you were enticed and led astray to idols that could not speak. Therefore, I want you to understand that no one speaking by the Spirit of God ever says, 'Let Jesus be cursed.' And no one can say, 'Jesus is Lord,' except by the Holy Spirit. Now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are varieties of services, but the same Lord. And there are varieties of activities, but it is the same God who activates all of them in everyone. To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. To one is given through the Spirit the utterance of wisdom, to another the utterance of knowledge according to the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing by the one Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another the discernment of spirits, to another various kinds of tongues, to another the interpretation of tongues. All these are activated by one and the same Spirit, who allots to each one individually, just as the Spirit chooses." Hear what the Spirit is saying to God's people. One of the greatest philosophical dilemmas of all time, one that has plagued all of humanity pretty much ever since our ancient ancestors became evolved enough to weave two thoughts together in their brains for the very first time. The greatest philosophical dilemma, of course, is the problem of the one and the many, or the problem of the individual versus the collective. In other words, in things like politics and religious belief and economics, the question is, which is more important? Focusing on the well-being of the individual or focusing on the well-being of the entire community? For example, should we structure our policies around the individual pursuit of happiness and individual rights? Or should we structure our policies around collective happiness and the rights of the entire community or society? I mean, this whole issue, it's still at the heart and center of most of our political debates today in our country, is it not? Republicanism or democratic socialism? Libertarianism or Marxism? Or some version or flavor on that spectrum, right? Is it right for the government to tax us individuals more so that other people will benefit from our hard-earned, quotes, big-time money, right? Are government handouts just, or are they somehow muddying the waters of what it means to have individual rights? These are all types of questions that are being debated today, right? And I don't want to get into the weeds of the politics. I just say all this to make an observation that we Christians, especially in recent centuries, we have tended to err on one side or the other of this whole one versus the many debate, the individual versus the collective debate. And we modern Christians tend to either baptize the things that we hear about on CNN or Fox News. That's about as broad as the spectrum gets for many of us, unfortunately. And we let our political leanings influence our theology more than we let our theology influence our political leanings. But here's the thing. Ancient Christians, pretty much from the beginning, named this debate for what it is, centuries ago, millennia ago. It was a false dichotomy. We don't have to make the choice between the one or the many or the individual and the collective. Whenever it comes to the question of the one or the many, the individual or the collective, the answer should always be for us, yes. Both, please. Thank you very much. But unfortunately, we don't think that way anymore. We've lost sight of some ancient wisdom here. So how about a little thought experiment to help us to overcome this false dichotomy? Tell me, what is the most important line in the Apostles' Creed? Is one line more important than the others? Are some lines more important than the others? For example, is the line, "I believe in God, the Father, the Almighty," more important than the line about belief in the Holy Catholic Church? Is the line about belief in Jesus Christ any more important than the line about the communion of saints? The answer is no. No, because it's all one package. It is one faith being expressed in a multifaceted way. It is simultaneously an expression of the one and the many. The Apostles' Creed, it's not a smorgasbord of unrelated one-liners, some of which can be kept while others are discarded. No, to not have faith in the saints or the church is, in a very real way, to not have faith in God. In other words, you cannot pick and choose which parts of the creed you want to believe in and those parts that you don't want to believe in, because it's all one belief. It's kind of all or nothing. As one Nobel Prize-winning physicist once said, pick a flower on Earth and you move the furthest star. Well, the same is true for our creeds, the Apostles' Creed, the Nicene Creed. Those are the big two for us, right? If you uproot faith in the communion of saints or the church, for example, if you cross your fingers every Sunday when you get to that part, it shifts other things around as well, because the creed presents itself to us as one harmonious narrative, not as a collection of isolated dogmatic truth claims. In other words, to understand any one line of the creed, you need to have a sense of the whole. You need to see that one line in relation to the whole. So no, one line is not more important than any other. And having faith, furthermore, in people, in community, in communion, in the church, it's an essential expression of what it means to have faith in God. It's part of it. It's a one package again. Now, I know that many people today, they take issue with the creed, or the creeds, I should say. There are spiritual gag reflexes triggered because they feel like the creeds are just narrow dogmas that are being hurled at them by an institution. And it's really just like cramping their style and thwarting their individuality and their individual mindset, right? But I'm starting to suspect, I've heard that complaint over and over and over again, but I'm starting to suspect that this whole notion of dogma and our kind of gag reflex with it, this is not the main reason as to why people today are prone to rejecting the creeds or certain parts of it. I think this is merely the issue that is named because people don't know how to get to the heart of the real issue and name that instead. I'm starting to suspect that their rejection of the creeds, it has less to do with dogma, and it has more to do with narrative. Again, the creed presents itself to us as a unified narrative, a story. It's an invitation to not only listen to a story, to affirm its existence, but it's an invitation to be participants in that story. Our belief takes its shape from within this collective story that the creed tells. So we say, I believe in. We're from within the worldview of the narrative. Thus, the creed, it's not about affirming our belief in certain like facts about God, but it's about acknowledging that our faith comes alive from within this mysterious story about God and the movement that he has triggered in our world. So the problem then isn't that the creed is dogmatic, and we modern Americans don't like dogma. There's some truth to this, but I actually think Like, if people could really name the issue, they would find that it's a much deeper thing, right? The problem is that the creed, it gives an overarching narrative to those of us who live in a society where we have been indoctrinated into rejecting any and all types of overarching narratives. We have erred so far on the side of individualism that people today don't have a collective story to live by alongside other people, to belong to orient their lives around. They don't have a story that fills their lives with meaning and purpose. We are not accustomed to belonging to anybody else's story other than the ones that we create for ourselves. I mean, if we're lucky, we know how to say, this is my story. And that's if we're lucky. But we no longer know how to say, this is our story. One of the great casualties of modernity is that in being stripped of a collective narrative, a common story with other people, we've also been stripped of the parts that we can play within a narrative alongside other people. In other words, whenever we lose our sense of connection with others, we also lose our sense of individuality. So many older generations look at younger generations today and they scratch their heads and they say, what is wrong with younger people, younger generations today? I got this all the time whenever I was a youth minister, like a lifetime ago, and I still get this constantly. What is wrong with younger generations today? Well, let me tell you what's wrong. It's that we don't have a common story that binds any of us together. And because of this, we don't have a sense of belonging. We're like a puzzle piece without a puzzle. We have inherited a philosophical tradition that tells us that we ultimately don't know where life is heading. And because of this, we don't know what life is about. To use Aristotle's words, we no longer have a telos. Like, we don't know what we're aiming for, what we're shooting for. There's no collective sense of that. It's entirely up to each and every individual person to figure it out as you go. Like, you just make shit up as you go through life and you hope for the best, crossing your fingers, right? That's like as best as we can do these days. And because of this, we don't know what roles we are to play. And without knowing our roles, we also don't know how to make life meaningful. We don't know how to measure success and whether we're living this life successfully or not. As Aristotle also said, it's easier to achieve your aim if you actually have a target. Well, younger generations have inherited a country that has removed all meaningful targets from public aim, which is why so many of us, most of us probably, are aimless. And if there is such a thing as the common good, we don't know how to define it. Nor do we know how to contribute to it. For we have been taught that the very idea of holding anything in common with other people, that's like the greatest philosophical heresy of our day. We are indoctrinated into believing that commonality with others is one of the most oppressive forces against our individuality, that freedom is all about severing ourselves off from others and their ideas. But deep down, though, I still think that most younger folks would really like to contribute something to the common good. But again, there's no common to contribute to. At best, we have just a conglomeration of individuals. And nor do we know how to define the good that could be contributed. Without a shared vision of reality, the good cannot ultimately be known. What's wrong with young people? That. That's just the tip of the iceberg. But my friends, the scandal of Christianity is that it's audacious enough to tell us that there is a common narrative that we can all belong to. St. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 12 this morning that there is a story that we can be baptized into, one that will fill our lives with meaning and purpose. We can find our individuality in the midst of a united diversity, in the midst of community. We can know what roles we can play. We can find our calling in life. And there's a community where we can learn what it means to contribute to the common good. There's a context where we can learn how to manifest the divine by manifesting the fullness of our God-given giftedness. St. Paul doesn't see the church as an institution as much as he sees it as a community where we can truly discover what it means for us to be, to exist, to have our being. We can discover our being by participating in the church's story, in God's story, together. And everyone has an important role to play in this story, a calling to discern in this story. Everyone is invited to manifest the divine in their own unique way. Paul tells us that there are gifts that are latent in each of us. But whenever we come into this communal story together, God activates these diverse gifts so that we can all manifest them for the common good. So in the church, we are meant to learn how to be practitioners of the common good. We put it into practice. That's the goal. That's a telos that we have, right? We learn how to manifest the divine and offer up our unique gifts for the betterment of the many. We learn how to live for somebody else other than ourselves. And we come to find out that this is actually what life is all about. And we learn how to harmonize our individual stories with God's grander cosmic story. Just like how the Apostles' Creed is not a dogmatic, it's not a list of isolated individual dogmatic statements, but it's one story. So too, the church is not a collection of isolated individuals, but one body made up of many parts. Just as the creed is one faith being expressed in a multifaceted way, so too the church is one spirit being expressed in a multifaceted way through us. The church is both one and many. When it tilts too far to one side or the other, it really ceases to be the church. And interestingly enough, the word that Paul uses here for gifts and talking about spiritual gifts is the word charisma, literally. We find our charisma, our vitality, our unique way of manifesting the divine, the image of God within us, our personhood. We find this only in communion with God and each other. Paul's not giving us, in this passage, a vision of how he thinks the church could be better administered. No. He is giving us a radically different vision of reality itself, a subversive philosophy that rivals nearly every aspect of American culture today and most political systems and economic systems today. In Paul's vision, a person who seeks to live only for themselves, they are like a hand cut off from the body. Or they're like a foot trying to say to an eyeball, I don't need you. I'm good on my own. Thank you very much. Paul's vision of reality, it's far more holistic and well-balanced than anything on offer today. For him, he sees a world where those who are gifted with wisdom and those who are gifted with knowledge, they're actually like talking to each other and shaping each other and leaning into each other, unlike most of academia today. He sees a world where those whose life's work is to heal people. They are in conversation and fellowship with those who are using their gifts to bridge racial and language barriers. And Paul is saying, most of all, that we cannot find ourselves, that we cannot discover our true selves apart from community, apart from those divine relationships that are seeking the common good. But this is an ancient wisdom that we modern people in general, and we church people in particular, have completely lost sight of. People today, they no longer have a context in which to find themselves, to sharpen themselves, to define themselves. Most people have been taught that they have to define themselves over and against others and not in community with them. In order to find their true personhood, they have to cut themselves off from others, distinguish themselves from others. And as a result, we're all like hands cut off from the body. And in a world where there is no body, being a hand makes absolutely no freaking sense whatsoever. Because a hand makes no sense unless you first understand how it's meant to function with the rest of the body. My friends, how would it change what we're all about in the church? If we can get to the point where we could see the church as something more than an institution or a tradition or a group of like-minded religious individuals, what if we saw the church through Paul's eyes? What if we saw it not just as a place that we go to pray and to worship, but what if the church became for us a place where we could encounter our deepest selves, our roles in life, and a narrative that is so much bigger and grander than anything we could ever, ever imagine for ourselves? I don't know about you, but I can't help but think this would change just like about everything. It would change everything for us and for so many people around us.